Hello, hello. Welcome back to Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Suns weekly radio show. It is 4 o'clock on Thursday. I am your host today, Skylar. And with us today, we have a very special guest. Cleo, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Cleo Anderson Green. I run the Academy of Lasting Love here in the Valley, and I have my doctorate in clinical psychology, and I work with children, families, and couples.
Awesome. And Cleo wrote a really fantastic column in this week's Soper Sun, so make sure to check that out. It is called When Your Teen Goes Quiet or Gets Snarky, Reconnecting Before the School Year Buries You. And Cleo, what inspired you to write that column?
Well, you know, I just feel throughout the summer, as it gets hotter and hotter, you know, and teens are at home, parents are around kids more and more, and, you know, tempers can fly a little. And so, you know, or there can be some triggers. And so I really wanted to write a piece that could be helpful for parents as they then enter this next stage into the school year.
And is it, you know, you mentioned summer, having some of those triggers, is that more common in the summertime? And is that, why would that be?
I think summer, it's when parents are kind of around their kids more often. Otherwise, I mean, of course you can send kids off to summer camps and do that sort of stuff. But typically when you've got the kid at home or, you know, doing these sort of little breaks throughout the day, but they're spending more time with their parents, tensions can, they're just more likely to rise because of more interaction. And then you're adding the heat and all this stuff on top of it. You know, it's like,
yeah
it can be a little bit of a boiler house.
Totally. And one of the things I really liked about your column was how you characterized teens' responses to certain stressors, and you characterized them as clams or porcupines. What does that mean?
Well, so these are typical response styles, you know, and I know that teens can, there can be some, you know, a spectrum, and teens can sort of be more in the middle or on the extremes. I would say that the clam is typically, they shut down and withdraw, and they tend to go inward and avoid, you know, they give one word responses, don't share much about themselves, and generally like to spend time away from people who trigger them. And that sort of thing. And then with the porcupine, you know, these can be incredibly affectionate and loving kids, but when they're triggered, they typically vacillate between being, you know, sort of rude back, or, you know, they get snarky, and then they can also be silent, but it's a different kind of silence than the clam. It's can be, there's more anger and emotionality behind that silence.
Okay. Interesting. And you talked a lot about, I think you split the stressors into two categories.
Yes. So you've got overwhelming feelings that the teen doesn't know how to deal with. And then you've got, you know, a need to control something, anything in a life where, I mean, when we think about it, almost every major decision has been made for the teen, you know, by another person.
Yeah, I found that super interesting, because I think, you know, in my adult life, you kind of forget that that's true, about high school especially. And, you know, yeah, as you're growing up, you, you want to make your own decisions that make sense. So what should parents do? You know, what kind of response should parents have if they're finding themselves in this situation with their child?
Well, there's a few things you can do, but I don't want to sort of just brush over them and not give enough detail. So I think I would say the biggest thing is to be gentle on yourself as a parent, and to know that you are going to make mistakes, and to apologize and own those mistakes with your teen, because your teen is so perceptive. They're going to know when you've made a mistake. You know, they're going to know when you've spoken to them in a way that you wouldn't accept them speaking to you. And so by apologizing and owning that, your teen is going to have so much more respect for you. And it also, like, kind of, it's an invitation to the teen to then apologize and own their behavior, because you're signaling, hey, look, you know, this is a family where we're actually allowed to make mistakes, and we're allowed to apologize. And it's like, we're not going to admonish each other for just being human. Because I feel so often parents, you know, they come to me and it's like, they almost feel like they have to be this perfect person or this super, you know, this superhuman. And that is so not the case.
Yeah, I found that super interesting. And especially what you say in the column about like the acceptance versus like the correcting behavior. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but saying that the parents, you know, if the teen is lashing out or shutting down, rather than try to correct their behavior, just accept that they're going through a lot and try to just take it in stride, right?
Yes, and that is, you know, and I get that, you know, parents are like, wait, so I've just got to accept this bad behavior. And it's like, I understand, it's so overwhelming and it's like so triggering, right? But yes, it's sort of like ignoring the bad behavior for a period. You know, you're trying to ignore the bad behavior, or you can easily say something like, you know, hey, I'm having a really hard time with the way I'm being spoken to right now. And I think, you know, I don't want to get angry. I don't want to get frustrated. I'm really trying to work on this. So I need to take a break. And we can talk about this another time when, you know, in like 10 minutes or later today when I've kind of calmed down, because I really love you and I want to talk about this in a productive way. And so that can be really big.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm interested, you know, if we can talk about you a little bit. And your background, like what spiked your interest in this field?
Well, I'm English, but I grew up in Hong Kong. And okay. So my mom was a...
I thought I detected a slight English accent. I wasn't sure, though. Just a couple words.
It's not... It's rather faint now because, you know, being out in the States for 12 years, I mean. But... Yeah, you know, my mom, she was actually a leading couples therapist in Hong Kong. So I remember being, you know, 9 years old and going into Central, because I lived out in Tai Po, which is kind of this rural farming area near the China border. And we drive into Central, and this was, you know, early on when she was cutting her teeth as a couples therapist and listening to these tapes and educational videos. I mean, you know, educational sort of podcasts. And I just found it so interesting, the whole relationship dynamic. And then as I aged, you know, as I got older and started working more with kids, I was a tutor out in England, and I was an English tutor in Hong Kong. And that was really fun to work with kids and their families. And then it just sort of spurred me also, because there's so much overlap between the couple's relationship and the child parent relationship. I mean, it's very surprising how much overlap there actually is and how much the foundational principles apply to everything. And so it was sort of natural for me to take the couples approach, but then also really get into family and child work, because I'm also a ski instructor for Aspen. And so I love working with kids, you know, at Buttermilk and all that, you know, shout out to the Buttermilk crew, but yeah.
Shout out Buttermilk.
So that's my passion.
Cool. You know, you were just saying that there's such a connection between couples therapy and the relationship with their children. And before the interview, you were telling me about some pretty outstanding statistics about couples therapy. Would you mind running
for
that back?
For sure. Well, you know, I was digging into the research a little bit, and it's rather surprising, because this is like traditional couples therapy actually has, you know, upwards of, 75% plus failure rate, and actually 50% of couples end up not making it past, you know, they don't come back for their third session. And so these are huge. And I think the biggest reason for that is because, you know, the couples therapists really try to, and there's no judgment here with this. This is just a pattern that I've explored through my, you know, doctorate program and seeing how this all works is like, and also too from my mom's 30 years of experience, it really ends up that the couples therapist tries to, it's like you've got two people and there is a lot of animosity and negative feelings towards each other. And you're coming into this setting where you then need to get all vulnerable and share your feelings and stuff when your partner doesn't give a darn how they've made you feel, right? And so it's like, well, yeah, I hear that you're upset about me not taking out the trash, but you never wash the dishes, for crying out loud. You know, I'm doing this myself. And so it just doesn't land. And it's the same way with a teen and parent relationship and a child parent relationship, where in order to get to that vulnerability, first there needs to be goodwill. It's almost okay. like trying to go for a surgery when you've got a horrible cold, right? It's like, it just give it time to heal first and then attack the problem. And actually, a lot of times, once the goodwill has really increased, the problems sort of, you know, they don't all disappear on by themselves, but a lot decrease.
Interesting. The 75% failure rate of couples therapy, does that then mean that the couple separates 75% of the time, or it just they stop going to therapy?
Well, they stop going to therapy. I think it's a mixture of several different outcomes. You know, you've got the couples who will stay together but remain roommates, you know, sort of they get along
like
well enough.
For their child.
Yeah, for their child.
And then do they separate once their child
They could do. Some do that. Some also stay together just for the finances, right? That can be huge. I mean, divorce is so costly. So a lot of times it's like, well, if it ain't broke, you know, don't change it.
It's only kind of broke.
If it's only kind of broke, you know. Yeah. And people, because people, they can get used to a less than ideal situation. I mean, people have really good capacity for that. So you get the roommates and then you get the people where it's just, you know, a shouting match and then, yeah, they divorce pretty quick.
Okay. Know? And, you know, in the title of this column, sorry, changing gears a little bit, and then I want to go back to the organization that you co-founded. But in the column, you say, you know, before the school year buries you, trying to reconnect with the teen, what does that mean? And what is the school year's relevance?
Well, yeah, that's a solid question. I think for me, the way I think about it is once the school year starts, you know, teens and parents are both in academic mode. You know, it's like working on the academics and also sport activities. And it just ends up really depleting the energy and wherewithal that everybody has. And so I'm kind of making the stand that it's not going to get better as the school year progresses. I mean, it is kind of downhill, actually, from here, where you're at in, and not to scare anybody or anything like that. I'm just, you know, it's a...
It's the school year starting.
Yes, the school year is starting. So, but it's just like, you know, if you can get these habits and if you can start trying to, you know, repair and get into a better place now, all it's going to do is carry on with really good momentum as the school year goes.
And, you know, I know you just said it's not going to get better. Earlier, you were also saying that the summer, all that time teens and parents spend around the house and together can really exacerbate tensions. Like, if they have a bad relationship, and teens and parents, I mean, and then the teen goes back into school and they're seeing each other less, like, could that dissipate on its own a bit, or is it still worth actively trying to pursue some sort of fix?
I think that's a really valid question. I would say it's almost like, you know, sort of an addict getting out of rehab as the fever breaks, but not then doing the actual work to stop, you know, to sort of stop that future addiction. And so, yes, while the problems themselves might not be so on the surface, I mean, the root cause is still there. And it's going to just, I mean, because here's the thing that I think a lot of, and parents that I work with, you know, they report, they say that this is a really helpful thought, is that your relationship with your teen will then dictate the decades to come as they grow up into adults. And right now they are living under your roof. You're sharing this time together. And if you don't fix these problems now, I mean, man, when they go off to college, why, what's making them come home? You know, what's making you guys have a good, solid, healthy relationship? If anything, all that resentment is going to do is build. They could then get into the wrong sort of social crowd, which is very, you know, it could be very anti-parent. I know that there are some sort of anti-parent messages out there in social media and academia. And it's like, you just, I think trying to repair that relationship as soon as you can only serve you, because who wants to be retired and your kids don't come around?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, that'd be awful.
Yeah.
And I think, and of course, that's the reality for some families, which is super unfortunate. For those of you just joining us, this is Everything Under the Sun, Sopra Sun's weekly radio show. It is 4:15 on Thursday afternoon. And we have Cleo Anderson Green with us, who has a doctorate in clinical psychology and is the co-founder of the Academy of Lasting Love, and we were talking about teen-parent relationships. Speaking of the Academy of Lasting Love, Cleo, you are the co-founder.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Academy? Well, when did you found it, and what is it?
Well, my mom founded it a while back. I forget the exact date, but I think it's in the sort of just after 2010, sometime around that, or maybe 2014. And she and I sort of founded it together while I was in grad school, but she was taking more of the lead. And now she's actually stepping back a little bit more. And I'm coming to the fore now that I've graduated and, you know, done all that stuff and gotten all that experience. And so it was a really, it's a paradigm for relationships, relationships with children, relationships, you know, and with people, people's relationships with themselves too, right? I mean, it's not just a child, if they have a negative self-view of themselves or struggle with, you know, a lot of worry and stress about other things, it can be incredibly helpful just to work with kids one-on-one. But we also have the Modern Marriage Method, which is a 7 to 14 week program, and it really revolutionizes. I mean, I think this is one of the best and quickest ways to turn your marriage around.
Whoa. What happens in 7 to 14 weeks? Well, is it just for like couples, or is it, does it also involve children?
This one is primarily for children, but I would say that one of the things we really were mindful about as we built this program was that the principles apply to every close relationship you have. So even your coworkers and your, you know, with your boss or your other family members, your sister, whatever, it can apply to everything, because relationships, the fundamentals are so shared across different styles. So it's a 7 to 14 week where, you know, you're meeting one-on-one every week, but there's a lot of self-learning in this. You know, it's not coming to therapy and talking about everything that's going wrong, and then you guys just leave more hopeless, and it's like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? That kind of thing. It's like really skill building, getting those tools, knowing what to do. And then the big thing is that you commit to your marriage for a year and you fully commit to embracing these skills. You know, it takes 7 to 14 weeks to learn all of them, but then you're really, and because if it's taken you a long time to get to this place, it's going to take you a little bit. I mean, you've got to be down for a little bit of work, you know, and so a year is sort of where we find good results.
Okay, so that part is with couples then.
Couples, and it actually doesn't even need to be couples. Just one person can actually save the relationship, yeah, through this.
Interesting.
You do not need both parties to do it. And I mean, we even have some people who, yes, they did divorce and now, you know, but they want to fix what caused the divorce because they very insightfully recognize changing the partner ain't changing the pattern.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, that is ingrained in you. And so much of this is role modeled from our own parents. And, you know, I'm not in the business of going back and admonishing past generations and anything like that, you know, but it's just like, sadly, most of us were not taught this really effective growth model of love, you know, how to love effectively.
Okay. Whoa. And earlier, you said that so much of a couple's relationship comes down to the relationship with their child or children. How does that play into this, the 7 to 14 week, Modern Marriage Method?
Yes. Well, what I was referring to in that is that, you know, the same patterns that you have in your romantic relationship are going to express themselves in your child-parent relationship. And so, you know, typically in every relationship you have either the shutdown withdrawer or you have the demand criticizer. And the shutdown withdrawer, they typically, you know, go quiet, avoid, pull away when when things get tough. And the demand criticizer, you know, they pursue, question, and pressure. And it's no, you know, again, it's just the natural way we've grown. So it's like, there's no point in fighting against it. It's like just to sort of accept it and change it is the best thing. And this shows up then in child to parent, where, you know, if you typically are the demand criticizer with your partner, you're going to fulfill that role with your kid.
Is the shutdown withdrawer and the demand criticizer within a couple's relationship, is that kind of like the clam porcupine?
Yes.
Just for 100%. Adults?
Exactly. Same. It's the same paradigm, just different players.
Okay. Whoa. Yeah, I see what you mean by the fundamental similarities of relationships. With the clam porcupine and with parents' relationships with their teens. In the column, you talked a little bit about how to create low-pressure environments for teens as a parent. Could you talk a little bit about that?
100%, yeah. You know, research shows that teens have a much harder time opening up in the typical face-on conversation styles that adults do. You know, it can be very, that full-on eye contact, it can be very overwhelming, it really makes them feel scrutinized and cornered. You know, I mean, every teen is different. Some might happily, you know, launch into a long dialogue of their how their day at school was sitting across from you at the dinner table. But a lot of times, you know, parents are like, my kid would rather eat glass than do that kind of thing. You know, this is a nightmare. And so what I really have found so helpful is when, you know, the parent just relaxes and doesn't force this dialogue anymore. It's just like you take a breath. It allows your kid to take a breath. And when you stop pushing, you no longer get that resistance and defensiveness. And over time, your kid will actually come to you, because I think it's so important that parents recognize your kid really wants a good relationship with you. You know, they really love you, and they really, very few people go through life going, yeah, I don't really care if my parents really are proud of me or value me. But, you know, that's very rare.
Yeah, definitely. And what about peers? Does that play a factor in, you know, both the relationship between parents and teens? Like, should the parents focus on their teens' social circles at all? And how much does that play a part?
Well, I mean, you can if you want to, but what can you do about it? That's my question to that, right? It's like, you know, I feel a lot of parents out there are like, yeah, I can't tell my kid to do anything they don't want to do. So even if you disagree with their friends, what is the other option? I mean, you can't force your teen to stop hanging out with friends. It's just you get back into the power dynamic. So instead, really to sort of just accept where they are, but also have faith in yourself that you have hopefully instilled in your child these really good values. And yes, while they might surround themselves with a crowd that is less than ideal, or, you know, you are a bit concerned about, the more you can just let them explore it on their own and not try to push your own agenda, the more likely the kid is going to be at really recognizing later, actually, you know, when they do like nick stuff or steal stuff in the steal stuff in the U.S. you know, from the convenience store, that really isn't something that I really respect. And then, but if the parent comes in too hot and is like, you can't see these guys, you know, that's enough, then all the kid will do is cling to it, because it's that then you're fighting their identity.
Okay.
And then the kid's like, whoa, absolutely not, I can't back down on this. And they will actually stay in a bad friendship, even if they actually really do want to get out of it, just to sort of be their own person to their parents.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. With the Academy of Lasting Love, like, what, I know, is it based in Basalt? No,
I'm based in Basalt, but I work with families all over the Roaring Fork Valley.
Okay.
And onward.
Okay. How many families do you work with, kind of like in a given week or a year?
Well, it depends on seasonal. I think it's hard in the summer holidays when everybody's off, but I then have online stuff that I can work with. So I try to also have a good balance of, you know, life and work and doing the stuff that I enjoy, which is learning more, writing stuff about, you know, these topics. It's a passion of mine.
Oh, cool. Do you write like papers and stuff?
Well,
yes.
And we had, you know, I'm getting some blog posts because I want to update the blog and everything. And so I'm getting some material set up for that. And also just for talks in the future, I really enjoy public speaking as
nice.
Well.
Oh, that's so awesome. And you said you also work online some. Is that with these therapy sessions? Or is
coaching sessions.
Coaching sessions, yeah. Should I call it therapy? Or?
I legally, we have to do coaching.
Okay.
But, you know, so
okay.
It's all good. But it's like, you know, the same. It's the same thing. Like,
yeah.
Well, legally, I can't say that, but you get what I'm picking, you know, you get what I'm putting down. But no, so these coaching, I do a lot of coaching too with couples and families internationally as well that don't necessarily have the type of services that they're looking for in their local area.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What, you said internationally?
Mm-hmm. Internationally.
Where,
so I work with families and couples in Asia.
Whoa.
Especially. That's big because also growing up in Hong Kong, you know, I understand that environment.
Oh,
and then,
cool.
sort of across the U.S. and places in Europe too, the U.K.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. And how do you get the word out there about your organization?
A lot of it is word of mouth, and then
like all the way to Asia.
Yeah, all the way to Asia. UK. That community, the expat community, is strong out there.
Cool.
You know, so it's cool stuff.
Which is it? Hong Kong specifically, or which?
Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia. You know, anywhere with and Shanghai too. A lot of wherever there are expat communities.
Okay.
So
that's so awesome. And Cleo, we've got just under 2 minutes left in the show. It flies by.
Sure does.
I do want to give you a chance to talk about what is next with some talks and the organization.
Fantastic. Yeah. So what I'm doing right now, because we covered all of the, you know, kind of the information about, you know, teens and the different types of teens. But really, my talk is to I have a talk scheduled for Carbondale on the 26th, that Wednesday at 5:30, and then I have another talk scheduled for Basalt, and these are at the community library, so Basalt on September 1st, also at 5:30. And this is really to just, you know, get parents the knowledge of what to do next. You know, how can you now really reconnect with your teen, understand what their triggers are, and then really rock that relationship. And my goal is to just leave with parents feeling really knowledgeable now of the issues and really prepared to make like really exciting changes.
Oh, cool. And kind of what will that look like? Like how many hours is it?
Oh, yeah. It's just really it's 45 minutes with Q&A, and I already have a handout with all the information you need to take away from it. So it's I'm trying to give as much information as needed, but also to make it fun and entertaining and just, you know, good open-hearted discussion.
Oh, that's a blast. And where's the best place for parents to find that information online?
Well, you can find it on the Carbon, like on the libraries, but I would actually say too, if you go to the Academy of Lasting Love and /teentalk-2026, it's there, and there will also be a pop-up coming up on the homepage.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Cleo. This is Everything Under the Sun.